Hey, and welcome to the Weed Out, where we weed out the bullshit and talk about the nonsense happening in our backyard. I'm Spencer Fox Peterson with my co-host as always.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna May Booty.
This week is we're recording this on January 9th and hopefully have this out by beginning of next week. So, January 15th or so, 2024. Happy New Year to everybody. Really excited. We have a special guest today, Sierra Dickey, a freelance writer, organizer in the Connecticut River Valley, and most notably has written for the Shoestring, is a contributor for the Shoestring. So you can easily find their work there, or we'll talk more places you can find where Sierra's at. And as always, we'll post that in our show notes, www.theweedout.com. And as always, you can find us on all the social medias. Our link tree is there, so it can get to anything relevant. And again, on our website, on each episode, we have show notes with any relevant links or relevant background given during the episode. So that's it for housekeeping. Thank you, everybody, as always, for tuning in. We appreciate you. The numbers don't lie, and we appreciate everybody being a part of this. The Weed Out and other great local news writers and collaborators and organizers, activists, union organizers, all the good stuff. So I'm really excited to have Sierra in. We love the Shoestring. We love all the other stuff Sierra is working on, focusing a lot on police accountability. So it's right up our alley. And I guess before we get started, Joanna, how are you? Do you have any housekeeping for the audience?
No, not at all. You've covered it. I'm doing well. I hope everyone gets through the cold season as well as they can. And I'm also just excited to be talking with Sierra just as much as you. I know Sierra's work with the Shoestring, and I know that she works with other writing mediums as well. So I li would love the audience to hear about that. And like you said, I'm just excited because Sierra currently covers police, prisons, and migrant communities, for the Shoestring. So, like you said, we're very like-minded and we focus on some similar topics.
Yeah, so without further ado, welcome, Sierra. Thank you for coming on the Weed Out.
Yes, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
You look all
We are
bundled up. I
too.
hope it's not too cold where you're at.
It's freezing where I am, but I'm also always freezing, so it's okay.
I am too. I bundle as well.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you can stay comfortable through our conversation. Again, thank you so much for coming on. Always love to hear from local content creators, writers, journalists, activists, organizers. There's no, there's no better way than to network through grassroots means. So thank you so much for, being part of it. And I guess Joanna is kind of gonna, she's been doing most of the prep with you. So I'd love to just kind of let Joanna take the episode over, and I will ask any clarifying questions if I hear any.
Well, since we were just focusing on stuff from the Shoestring, I think I'm going to start there, if that's okay, Sierra. And I guess for me, I wonder, you have such awesome stories in the last few years. I have been going over them for the last few weeks. I've read them when they come out. I'm going to let the audience know a few of my favorites. You covered when Massachusetts tried to roll out prison nurseries. What are prison nurseries and why is a consulting firm recommending them to Massachusetts? And you've also covered something very local that Spence and I also wrote about. And these are only two of many. I'm going to bring up a few more. But so racism within the police department embroils Greenfield mayor and city council. So I live near Greenfield and Montague. So thank you so much for covering that. And I
Yeah.
guess what I want to ask is, do you have any favorites? Those are probably two of my favorites, but do you have any favorites? And can you let the audience know where you get the inspiration or you find ideas to write the articles you've done for the Shoestring locally?
Yeah.
And you don't
Well,
have to have one favorite.
well, thank you so much. It's always like a treat, I think, for writers to hear from folks that have read their stuff. So I'm glowing right now, so thank you. But
Well, thank you for the information and doing the work.
yeah, so I think it was a two-part question. So my favorite stuff and then where I get my inspiration or information. My favorite, I mean, I think I have a few. Basically, anytime I've gotten to write about prisons, particularly like women's incarceration and the battle around trying to free women in Massachusetts and stop the new women's prison. I've written about that, I think, 3 or 4 times for The Shoe. And every time I get to write about that is by far my favorite because I care a lot about that issue and I'm involved like as an organizer as well on those campaigns, but also because I find that prison stuff and particularly like women's prison issues are super super underreported just everywhere. And when there is press about them, like for the in the Globe, for example, I feel like the tone is like this horror is happening and it's super horrible and less about like who's fighting, the carceral state in Massachusetts, who's trying to free these women, why could these women be freed, how could they be freed, like et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, anytime I get to write about prisons, it's really challenging and fascinating and I really care about it. So that would be probably my favorite pieces. And then I get stuff, I mean, I think inspiration is a little different for me from information, but the kind of roots of all of these stories have been either stuff that I've like heard about being out in the community as, an organizer in various spaces, and like someone will tell me something and I'll think, oh, that needs to be a story, if this person's comfortable with it or if the org is comfortable kind of having it be examined in that way by the media. Or I myself, in organizing roles, will look around and be like, what would be strategic to get people informed about this issue? Or where are people underinformed about this issue? Do I think an audience could be interested in this? And kind of go from there. I started writing about the cops locally. With the starting with the Greenfield police, because I had run into folks that were involved in the Greenfield People's Budget. And I was so fascinated by what they were doing. And they had just like endless stories to tell because they've been so in-depth researching the GPD, basically. And I forget how I first met them or started talking to them, but as soon as I did, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to cover this because I'm here. I was based in Gill at the time. I was writing for The Shoe. I thought the stories were important. And so that kind of just dropped into my plate a little bit. But I think writing about cops was a good prep, kind of like a good intro prep to write about prisons and like the PIC. Prison industrial complex more broadly. So grateful to The Shoe, grateful to organizers and organizing spaces, because that's really where almost all of my story ideas come from.
When
Thank you. Sorry.
thank you very much. And I just to bring up Greenfield for the audience. We've written and done some coverage on Greenfield. The last 6 months has mostly been focusing on bigger picture stuff around the area, surveillance and such. But the Greenfield government, and especially when it relates to police, it's like Parks and Rec on mushrooms. Like the TV show Parks and Rec. It's such a comic, like it, I don't know, it's such an extreme caricature of like dysfunctional government. So I suggest anybody go back and listen to our episodes or find any read anybody writing. Like there's no way you can spin this government. It's pretty bad.
It's true. I will definitely link to Sierra's story too in the show notes, and I'll link to all of your stories on the Shoestring, because I do think the audience too, as someone who started as a prison abolitionist at a young age, I have like family members who are or have been incarcerated. You're right that there's not much coverage about prisons, and unless you have looked into it and got information or you have like firsthand experience, it's really hard to like understand what people go through. And the fact that there was that No New Women's Prison movement, like, just thank you for covering everything you do. I think those topics are just so important. And I don't want people to think that this is the only place that you're writing, because they don't have to only go to the Shoestring. I did read in your bio that you've also been featured in Modern Farmer, the Adroit Journal, and Talk Poverty. So if you want to plug any of that, and then I seen that you're teaching a class in Greenfield for writing. So I'd love to hear all about that.
Yeah. Well, honestly, the other places that I have bylines, I have loved working for them. I'm really proud of those bylines, but the Shoe has been such a good home for my work that I haven't pitched around elsewhere in like 3 or 4 years. But I think that will change in the future because, you know, I love the Shoestring very, very much. And I feel like I've built some skills there that I'd love to apply to other publications. But yeah, my class right now in Greenfield at Looky here is, it's not exactly class. I do facilitate it and I do offer prompts and readings and run the meetings, but it's more of a kind of queer writing support circle.
Okay, I misunderstood. Thank you for
No. It's, I mean, it could, you know, it's kind of the either or. It's like kind of a class, kind of not.
Okay.
But we write together weekly using this model called the 100s, which comes from a bunch of different people. I think Emily Bernard was a scholar who kind of first initiated it, but it's popular with like a lot of feminist scholars as a way to generate writing together rather than like this individual person sitting down and trying to write a bunch on their own. We all write a 100 words a week in a shared document, and then people end up people end up appropriating, stealing, borrowing like images and phrases from each other. So it's an experiment in distributed authorship, which is really fun to play with. And I always find it offering this class or like being in a group really therapeutic, because people talk about their difficulties with writing, their successes with writing. They share like practices that help them write more. They talk about what they really want to be writing. And it just feels like very, very intimate and very supportive and special. So that is one thing I'm doing right now. And that's much more for creative work. There's no journalism really coming out of that yet. But I consider myself like both a creative writer and a journalist. And I'm trying to bring those two parts into more balance these days. So
that's awesome.
It sounds like a really cool third space.
Yeah,
you could call it a third space. I mean, you kind of have to pay to get into Looky here, so maybe it doesn't fit the definition perfectly, but it's probably the closest thing to a third space that I have in my life. Is just like, we're here to get to know each other and play around with this art form, and it's not a class, so I don't have to be in the position of delivering information, you know. I don't have to be an authority. So yeah, it feels great. It feels really great.
Yeah, collaboration's good. Collaboration makes the world go round.
Absolutely. And that leads us into another Shoestring topic, which was the collaboration and the podcast episode that you all did where you were the moderator for the police, and it brings us back to the Police Accountability Forum, which I know a lot of our audience actually potentially attended, but we would like to hear more about how that went for you, how it feels to moderate and be, you know, someone who is directing the conversation about these topics. And just so the audience knows, like, all of the people involved were either, I'm not sure, so Sierra, you can clarify. I don't know if Dan writes for the Shoestring.
I think maybe once he wrote for the Shoestring, but he was involved more because he was on the commission.
That's what I had figured. Thank you. So for the audience, there were three people that were on: Dusty Christensen, Shelby Lee, who is one of my family, and Dan Carity, if that's correct. And
I think it's Kennedy.
Kennedy. Thank you. And they all had different perspectives from either covering For Dusty and Shelby, that would be covering police accountability or police different issues regarding the police throughout Western Mass. And I think for Dan, like you just said, it really focused on the work that Northampton did with that police commission. So again, like how was it for you to be kind of the person that navigated the discussion for that forum?
I mean, I love facilitating stuff like that. I love moderating. So if any listeners out there need a facilitator or moderator, please hit me up. But so I love doing that work. When I worked at a high school for the last couple of years, I would often get asked to moderate like all school conversations with authors. So like either one author or two authors in conversation with each other. And I just really love that stuff. So I have a little bit of skills in the realm of like public conversation type thing. And I had done one other podcast for the SHU 2 years ago with Sarah Robertson, and we had just like a ton of fun putting that together. And Brian and Dusty knew they wanted to do this kind of live event, and asked me to moderate or facilitate, and I was very happy to. The way that we did it was we looked at Dusty's reporting on cops, Shelby's reporting on cops, and then thought about Dan, once Dan agreed to join us, thought about Dan's perspective and what Dan could bring and like add into what already exists as far as Shoestring reporting. And we just thought about that and all together came up with a really, really long list of questions for the event. And then I, on my own, kind of went through and edited the questions down and organized them into a sequence. And our goals were to kind of rehash like some of the major findings of Shoestring reporting on cops in our area. So Dusty's written a lot about Northampton, Shelby's written a lot about East Hampton, I'd written a little bit about Greenfield, and then Dan Kennedy was on the Police Review Commission for Northampton. So we covered, you know, a fair amount of ground, and Dusty also has written about Holyoke, I guess. So we covered a fair amount of ground. Our goals were to highlight what the SHU folks had found in the past, re-emphasize to the audience, like, this is actually happening. Like, these are actually the challenges that we're experiencing in our area. And this is absolutely not like a progressive paradise when it comes to policing. I mean, nowhere it is, but I think people struggle with that myth in the valley of like, not here, you know, but it couldn't happen here, whatever. So and then we also really wanted to like put the reporting in conversation with Dan, who, you know, had the experience of actually working with the Northampton Police Department, trying to get information from them, reviewing like lots of data about them, etc., and also someone who has thought a lot from an organizing perspective about like the harms of police, potential alternatives to police, how you can make small steps like through local government and grassroots movements to like buffer the harms of police or reduce their power, etc. So that was kind of our planning process. And then the night of, I think what ended up happening was that folks who came were predisposed to be interested in cops, obviously predisposed to be worried or concerned about their local police or the police in the valley or policing in general as an institution. And still, even though our folks were kind of like an educated audience that came that night, what I felt in the room was like people were kind of radicalized maybe even a little bit more by the specificity of the information of like, you know, Dusty can tell you about this thing that happened, and Shelby can tell you about all these things that happened, and then Dan can tell you about what a nightmare it was to try to be a review, you know, on a review commission. And we didn't really push the audience in any direction. We just really asked everybody there to think really deeply about, what do we think? Like, if this is the reality, you know, and we're working hard to like report on our cops, you know, our area cops, and hold them to transparency, hold them to accountability, like, what do we think about that? And I don't think anyone came away thinking, we're okay, we're doing good, you know. I think the outcome was like, oh my gosh, I'm actually re-shocked. Like, I thought I was shocked, but now I'm even more shocked again by like what actually goes down with regards to policing in my local community. So,
which is makes me both sad and happy. That makes, yeah,
totally, yeah. Yeah.
And you answered my final thought question, so which was really about how the audience reacted. So thank you, because I didn't get to be there, but I'm really glad that the work and the effort that people like all of the writers for the Shoestring are doing to bring this information that's local especially to us. As a community, I don't want anyone in the audience that night that was at this accountability forum to feel like bad that you were radicalized either. Sometimes we do have to see it to understand what's going on. So, but it's so great that that happened. So we will link to that episode so that the audience can listen to it in entirety.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I would just add about the audience that night that I really loved to see, like I was excited about, was that there was a few people who kind of came up to us at the end and said, thank you so much for making this like this happen and this space happen, and were kind of asking for more because they felt like getting to go to a public forum that was like focusing on an issue and focusing on community organizers' approach to that issue, and also open to everyone as like a come learn or come talk or come, you know, get more information or come network. People were kind of saying to us, you know, like, oh, we don't have this enough. Like, we don't get these opportunities enough to like learn about a thing or network about an issue. And as you can imagine, like a SHU live podcast is super, super different from like town hall or whatever. So I loved getting that feedback because I also felt that in the room. It felt really generative. And I hope that the SHU keeps doing these. We talked briefly about making them quarterly. I have no idea if that will happen, but that would be dreamy if it did. But yeah, I think the SHU could play a really cool role in like taking from just, you know, taking from the journalism and putting a little bit into like public popular, you know, popular education more of like, let's have a space and talk about these things. So we'll see if that happens. I would love for that to happen, but yeah.
It's nice to know that people are wanting that to happen too. That's fantastic.
I will keep my part piece short. Like, you have the patience of a saint for doing this work, because I don't have patience and I'm enraged constantly. And we do have to be patient with our, you know, community, with our, we have to have these difficult, long conversations. I just want to like shake people by the shoulders and be like, guys, how does a gun solve this? Like, let's think this through. Like, really, like, how does a gun solve this? Like, and so thank you for like holding these kinds of, being willing to moderate, because that would be real. That would, like, my heart might implode, you know. You know, like, I don't know if I could sit in the middle of that conversation when it seems so like black and white. But I think everybody in their gut kind of knows, like, everybody kind of wants to do right by other people, you know, and they've been indoctrinated with propaganda. It's everywhere. So we're all unlearning it, right? And but anyways, I just think I admire y'all putting the work in. And
yeah.
I think podcasting has its tools. You know, we only do 3 episodes a month, which are 3 to 4. I don't know, right, Jonah? And
yeah,
But you know, there's a million different styles of podcasts, so I would look forward to more of that personally, because I feel like, you know, Twitter and or social media in general is owned by these corporate ghouls who can clamp down on shit. And instead of trying to hit the lottery, we all should do grassroots organizing, where it's like you go to this website to download a podcast. It's a little hard, you know, once you build the network, that's good. So I think for some people like getting information via podcasts, some people are like, depends on this topic, but I love that you guys did that. I think there's a mark, I don't know about a market, you know, but there is an avenue of communication there. And
no, absolutely. Our own audience, a lot of the feedback we get, Spence, and you'll remember, like, people are so happy to get the local news almost read to them sometimes, because it is hard. It's hard to kind of like, it's hard to pull all of the pieces of things together. There's a lot going on out there and we're all so busy. So yeah, I think, thank you so much to you, Sierra, and everyone at the Shoestring. But I do hope as much as you, Sierra, that there are more, because I think just from our audience asking us and then you hearing that your audience is asking, it's clearly something people, I think, need or want in the community at large.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're spot on. And I think that there's folks like myself and other people too, that like would be really excited to try to make some of that stuff happen. So it's promising.
Absolutely.
Two different organizations that have kind of been a home for me for abolitionist organizing. The first is called Families for Justice is Healing. They're based in Roxbury, but they hold a kind of weekly volunteer coordinating space that anyone across the state can join in on. And that's where I've been really involved with the No New Women's Prison campaign through them. And then also Decarcerate Western Mass, which you all might know more about. Yeah, is based out here and is a much smaller grassroots bail fund, but has also been really incredible for me to organize with and get story ideas from. And I'm a part of that group now, and we're expanding our political education efforts. So stay tuned for more of that, which will be exciting.
Awesome. Thank you for letting the audience know about both groups. And I will share links to both. And yes, we do know Decarcerate, but I'll share links to both groups in the show notes as well.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you all. I have to run.
Thank you for being with us, Sierra. Take care.
Be in touch.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was a nice little chat we had with Sierra Dickey, freelance writer, writes for the Shoestring. And, mentioned a lot about no more women's prisons and prison abolition stuff, and that's really near and dear to my heart. So thank you, and shout out to our, you know, comrades here for doing all this. And you know, we do highly recommend you go listen to the prison or the police accountability podcast on the Shoestrings podcast feed. We can link it in the show notes so you can get to it. And check out Sierra's work wherever it is, and we'll make sure to get you in contact with where you can find her work. So Joanna, thank you so much and for co-hosting. I think you did a kick-ass job today. It's good to have you back. We didn't have the last episode, so I'm just glad you're back. And I don't know, do you want to do a round of ghoulery and tomfoolery?
Absolutely, and it's always good to be here. Thank you.
Great. So here we go. I'm going to bring up the article. It's pretty gruesome. So
it is dark. It is dark. So a trigger warning to anyone. There's a lot of death and all that stuff. So move along if you're not interested.
If you are listening and not watching on the YouTube, I assume you're listening. Most people listen to the show. And thank you, by the way, listeners. Thank you for listening to the show. If you're listening, we have an article. We pulled it from Fox 25 Houston. It's really only making its run on like local media. There's no real like CNN, et cetera. It's being talked about on social media a lot. That's how I found it, in abolitionist kind of circles. So this week's ghoulery and tomfoolery is 215 bodies found in Jackson, Mississippi, exposed behind a jail in Jackson, Mississippi. Unmarked pauper's grave behind the state jail. The same Jackson that Johnny Cash was singing about. I mean, it's so America, it like hurts my face. Like if somebody asks what's our culture, like I'm gonna point to this headline, like, and that's not a good culture, it's bad. And this is unfortunately not surprising. So like right off the bat, like, this is dark shit. There's people that are missing, and the real kick in the balls, bureaucratic red tape. Anybody that if their family member gets identified, the family has to give the state $250 to pay for the exhuming of an illegal pauper's grave unmarked. So yeah, you get hit on the way in and on the way out, and your family member's dead. And they're trying to say these are people that like didn't get claimed at the morgue, but there's the reason it got found out was because somebody who just got hit by a car on the highway was hit by an off-duty cop. They traced it all back and they found out he was buried in this jail, behind this jail. So Joanna, I don't know. it's gross. And it's,
yeah. So did you mention it's 215 bodies that were found? So I think that number like should also be shocking to anyone that was looking at like any oversight in this case. And I didn't know that. I hadn't thought about it. So as prison abolitionists, like, I hadn't thought what happens when people die. So this gives me a lot of ideas for like records requests that I have now, because it says at the beginning of the article that we're sharing that some of the graves were marked only by numbers or metal rods. So the lack of transparency and handling of this deceased is like considered questionable in terms of respect and stuff like that. So it definitely makes me wonder, this shouldn't be happening, and it's really horrific. So abolish prisons. That is why this is just another countless reason as to why that is something I believe.
So this article, it's had the most different headline than all the ones I could find. There's a whole bunch. There's two or three pages on the Google News tab. If you just put in Jackson, Mississippi, 215 bodies. And so we're reading it from Fox 26 Houston, a local Fox affiliate. And their headline was the most harsh, which is saying something. They don't know. None of them mentioned that the reason they found it is because an off-duty cop buried a body that he murdered. And that's how they found these other bodies.
That means like he talked to a CO or someone who like knew about this like place they buried people. So it's like how many other people that were buried there for this reason too? Like you just wonder.
Then there's blackmail, like, oh, I know you killed somebody and we took care of it, so you can't tell anybody about this. But that means when something goes down, I call you up, you help me do this. That's the game.
Right.
And this is a system.
Well, it's just so shady to think of like how many, other reasons are people buried in that?
And, you know,
that's just so scary.
The thing that makes me sad is there's every marginalized identity or status in our society are the ones that end up in these graves. But the worst statistic is Black and Indigenous women. How often they and trans Black Indigenous people, how often they go missing and aren't even investigated. But one white girl gets lost on a hiking trip and like the whole world stops. The rate is actually astonishing. It makes me so fucking angry. And it's even worse when you take like when you combine the stats of Black women and Indigenous women gone missing and nobody knows where they are. When you take the Black women, actually makes the number look a little bit better. when you have the two groups together, when it's just Indigenous women, it's scary.
Oh, it's really bad.
Like majority of the times an Indigenous woman goes missing, that she's never found, never looked for.
And exactly.
They end up in graves like this or in the bottom of quarries, and God knows why. There's a million reasons, ways this happens. Whether it's because cops aren't looking for vigilantes doing this shit because they can't, or it's just these people are getting snatched off their reservation where they're, you know, in their concentration camps. And it's just, it's so fucked up. So when people talk about like, this is the greatest country ever, it's like, nah, man, this place is the bad place. There's ghosts. There's ghosts all of this country. This place is haunted.
Well, and I don't know what country in the world isn't at this point, sadly.
I'm just saying in a such a short time, 500 years.
Well, yeah, no, and I would never say the idea that our country is great or number one has always seemed absurd to me. So I think most of our audience agrees with us there, but you would think that like articles like that, or you know, stories like this that come out in the local news would make more and more people feel, I mean, at least a little bit like we do, that we would hope. But like we talked about with Sierra, it's really hard until people have more information or have experience with something. So that's why we're doing this, even though the glory and tomfoolery isn't always like the most uplifting thing. I think it's important to highlight these kinds of stories to see the type of, honestly, like this is extreme glory. This is like 10 on the glory scale. Extreme ghoul factor. Especially the part where they found it, like you said, because a cop was killed someone and then buried them there. It's like wildly, wildly dark. And like I said, it does really trigger me to have ideas for like records requests on just the deceased in the prisons in Massachusetts and how is that all handled. I hadn't thought about it much until we looked at this article together.
Yeah, so just I just looked up missing. I just Googled it. I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers. I just want to give people perspective on the indigenous folks going missing numbers. Not just, this is not a pressure in Olympics or anything like that. It's all bad. It's not acceptable. So right here, the problem is so pervasive. This is in Canada, but
yeah, it's really bad there.
Canada and U.S. is roughly the same.
It is, yeah.
So it's like you can kind of extrapolate. I bet America's worse just because we're more populated. But the problem is so pervasive that the Canadian government doesn't know how many Indigenous women are missing or have been murdered. Estimates suggest that around 4,000 Indigenous women and girls and 600 Indigenous men and boys have gone missing or been murdered between 1956 and 2016. And they don't investigate this because I swear the U.S. government doesn't consider them citizens. They're a non-factor. They don't care. Like this is our ongoing genocide that we're living with. Like what we've done to the Native American people in this country. Like that's where all my heart watching Gaza and Palestine and all that stuff. All I think about is there's people here that this has already happened to, and there's some people left. And how we treat them currently, putting pipelines through their lands, giving them the worst, shittiest land, not giving them access to water, destroying their water. Like, our government does not give a fuck about them. And it's bad, man. It's so evil. And I don't know. It's all connected. It's all the same set of colonialism, capitalist fucking horse shit. But yeah, I mean, this is not okay. And that's all I can think about with this glory and tomfoolery today. Because it's not even tomfoolery. Tomfoolery implies some fun, some cheekiness.
Yeah, this is ghoulery.
It's just ghoulery. And like when I say there's like ghosts inhabiting this continent, like there are a lot of lost souls to this. And I'm not especially a religious person. And the amount of souls that have been stolen by greedy policies, which, you know, incentivizing the worst in some people, that, man, and like the victims we're never going to get back. And, you know, look how callously we treat just the Indigenous people who have suffered a genocide and ethnic cleansing and had their land stolen. So, and they didn't fucking go knocking on Europeans' doors, right? I don't know. That's just my ghoulery and tomfoolery. And we need to remember everybody, not just Indigenous folk, but you know, it's this is just so fun. Like, some people are shocked that America has jails with 2,215 people just buried, like, to go away, or they had nobody claim them. Come on, man. Like, this place is evil.
There's that, like, there's clearly more bodies. Like, if you find 215, there's clearly more. Like, that's how I think anyway about all of this. And you're right. Like, and it's so evil to the point where I think we have to recognize, however, that, like, it's not the people. And I think in our last episode with the River Valley PSL, they were talking about when they marched on Washington for Free Gaza and, like, ceasefire now issues currently. That's, like, what they're, we're in that episode, what they're we're talking about with them. You know, it's like the people, like, I don't consent to, like, not helping the indigenous pop or, like, harming the water protectors. So oftentimes,
why do they need water protectors, guys?
Well, that, I mean, they That's were literally up. Protecting our water, but they were protecting our water and then retreated, like,
no, I
terrorists, you know what I mean?
That,
so
the fact that that even needs to exist is a problem.
Right.
Who are they protecting it from is my question.
Well, yeah, at the time, the pipe. At the time, yes, the pipeline. It's extreme ghoulery, but I'm just saying, I think it's not always the people that the like the general population that consents to any of this. And so I think it should, the last few years have radicalized me even more in terms of understanding that, and I guess most people would consider me pretty like radical left to begin with, but I guess within me, how free are we in this country? And like, I already don't believe we have freedom or that we're free entirely, but how free are we? And I saw this today somewhere on social media. So if I can find it, I'll share it. But it's basically an individual talking about the situation and the genocide going on between Israel and Gaza, where Israel is committing a genocide and we're helping and aiding in it. And the person is basically talking about how if we can't move the government as a people, like if the people in charge of us won't listen, if the majority of us are saying, no, we do not want this, but we can't move them, how free are we? And the last few years have really shown us that 60% of the population can support or not support something. And the administration, no matter who is in charge, whatever team, they still seem to make the decisions that we would not collectively potentially be wanting to do. And I think that happens a lot of times with wars, especially recently, and oftentimes healthcare, education issues. And that part, I think, is why, that's why I'm so thankful when we bring on organizers and educators and people in the community like Sierra and so many others that have been on our podcast, just so that we see the alternatives and the organizers out there and the groups out there working, because we basically can't stop until we have to keep working together and fighting for the freedom of all of us. The people, the few people in charge and the few people making decisions should not be getting to override, I guess what I'm saying is to override the majority of what all of us believe and feel and know is right. And that's happening really often, I think.
Yeah. My outlook on the whole thing is you can't shine this turd, man. There's no undoing. You can't reform something that's doing exactly what's intended. Like, these laws aren't promises for rights, they're promises. Like, do you believe in the spirit of the law or do you believe in the letter of the law? And so often cases and judges and jurisprudence and all this stuff on top of each other, the quote-unquote sacred constitution has been used to argue for some of the most draconian shit. Like the secrecy around the police, because the government really takes seriously the security of the people. So the people can't even know about our security apparatus because it's got to be secret. See what I'm saying? Like, they, this stupid piece of paper can be argued degrees and directions that can shape everything and allow what, and then some, we're arguing about semantics. When the spirit of the law is people shouldn't be fucking held down, people shouldn't be surveilled, whatever, like all the things. And they're always finding ways to build on case law so that we can never fight. Like, I don't know. The system's crap. It goes back to King Charles court or some kings. I don't even know if it was King Charles, but, or maybe it's because I'm thinking the current king, like the fact that that still exists in 2024, and we're still operating on this fucking goons court system and jurisprudence. Fuck this. I don't want to be dick. And like, how do we live in a gerontocracy where all these people are old as fuck and local government middle, you know, they're middle-aged or higher. There's no people, there's no representation for regular folk. You have to have extra money to do it, or you have to sell out like a motherfucker. And I just, the government was founded by a bunch of fucking frat boys. And right now, a bunch of 80-year-olds are clinging to what a bunch of frat boys wrote down as excuse to keep their power. So we can keep hiding the fact that there's bodies buried of people's loved ones, regardless of what they did while they're alive. I don't know. So should be acknowledged that somebody died in the government's hands. It's a pretty slippery slope when we don't let them. When you don't hold them accountable for this, because clearly they don't give a fuck if bodies go missing. It's gross. So ghoulery. I will share the article. It's pretty gross, and they're trying to spin it as best they can. But you know, it's not being picked up by CNN or like, you know, Fox News cable shows. So I don't know. It's another one of those things. Will just be another like crazy ass story that goes under the fucking wayside. So ghoulery and the tomfoolery is on the mass media for not fucking talking about this, because I'm sure these paupers' graves are everywhere. I grew up in Quincy, Mass. There's marshes. Like, you throw something in the marsh, man, deep enough, you're not getting that out. You're gonna drain the marsh to find one body. Well, you might find 20, but.
Yeah, and I think the bigger issue though is because this is supposedly like, it shines a light again too, like, on the fact that like these systems, like you said, like are evil and like they're not respectful, they're not being held accountable, there's no transparency, and this is an extremely terrible scenario. That's probably, there are so many more bodies all over, you know.
Yeah, why wouldn't there be?
Exactly.
Kill people on fucking camera, they don't care. No shame. If they kill somebody and nobody's looking, did they kill them? That's exactly how they think.
I know. So watch people, everyone. I know most of us do.
Just be clear. If I disappear for whatever reason, I didn't want to die yet. I'll update that. You can hold me to that. Anyways, so end on that high note. But thank you very much to Sierra and all local journalists, organizers, writers, creators, whatever it is you do, truck driver, analysts, you know, academic, non-academic, it doesn't matter. Whatever you do for your community, thank you. Remember, you are valuable. And I don't know. That's all I got for this week. So thanks for listening to Weed Out. And Joanna, please take it away.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Sierra, and take care.